Hi, welcome to another episode of The Leadership Enigma. Now, you know we love to explore all types of leadership, especially disruption. So I have the wonderful Rob Moore with me, who is going to talk about all things disruptive. This is someone who was riddled with debt and turned himself into a multimillionaire property entrepreneur. He's the author of multiple books, specifically Money Matrix, which we'll talk about in this episode. He's the host of the Disruptors channel with over 2 million subscribers across all platforms. And he's had some very, very interesting guests. And we're going to dig into that as well. What's he seen? What's he heard? What's he learned? Come back to me just after this break when we'll be chatting to Rob Moore. Hi, I'm Adam Pacifico, and welcome to The Leadership Enigma, a world-ranked, award-winning podcast that's insatiably curious as regards what leaders do, how they do it, and importantly, why. We'll delve into the human doing, but even deeper into the human being and the power of human-centered leadership to drive sustainable change. So whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, corporate executive, each week we speak to global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts and disruptors, as together we will discover that success leaves clues. Rob, it's a huge warm welcome to the Leadership Enigma. How are you?
Good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. Now, I did a little bit of an introduction, but I've never quite done that justice. So tell us a little bit about your journey and how you've actually turned things around.
Yeah, so December the 15th, 2005, I was £50,000 in debt working in my dad's pub, earning £200 a week and spending £300 a week. And my dad had raised me to be an entrepreneur probably from age six. I think he got me working in his pub age six.
Right.
Stacking the shelves, changing the barrels. I loved it. I loved it. All I wanted to be was my dad. And my dad worked really hard and made millions and went bust and made millions and went bust and was successful. And he had a very up and down journey. But December the 15th, 2005, he had a huge nervous breakdown in his pub in front of all of his customers. I managed to get him outside the front because it was like he was possessed, and everyone in the pub just stopped. Like it was a Western, you know, when the doors of the saloon swing open, everyone stops. And there must have been 70 or 80 people in this restaurant pub. And I managed to get him out the front. And I was grabbing him and looking into his eyes and screaming at him. And nothing was registering. And the police came. They beat him up in front of me, my sister, my mum. They tied him up. They sectioned him. I mean, this was 19 years ago, and my dad still is so heavily medicated. It was bipolar disorder they initially diagnosed him with, manic depression. And I felt such shame. And I remember about a week after that, just every day beating myself up, hating myself. My dad had put me through school, university, bought my first car. He helped me buy my first house. He always supported me, even when it was hard for him. And then however many weeks of beating myself up, I said to myself, I don't know how, I don't know what, I don't know where, but I must change. Fast forward to now, and I have 340 property rental units. We own a big management company for property in Peterborough. I've managed about 1,350 properties. Got the UK's largest property training business, probably. The two training businesses for me do more than 20 million a year in sales. I think we've done over a quarter of a billion in sales since we've had the training companies.
Right.
I've written 19 books. Money Matrix just went live. Broke the world record for the longest public speech. Got one of the biggest podcasts in the world called Disruptors. Done 1,000 episodes. Interviewed some of the most famous people alive. Have 14 different income streams. And I don't sit here and go, wow, that's amazing. Look at me. I'm the Don. Yeah, wow. I say this because this was all driven by the shame of what happened to my dad and what I perceived I put on him in terms of pressure. He's still going. He's a fighter. My daddy just turned 80.
I was about to ask that.
Yeah, he's still going, but, you know, he's so drugged up. You know, we've got him in body, but we haven't got his full mind, but that's okay. It's better than nothing.
Listen, Rob, I really appreciate you telling that story. Listen, I've done a fair amount of digging in preparation for this episode. How often do you tell that particular story? Because I haven't heard that before or seen you talk about that before.
Yeah, maybe once a month. Sometimes I go into it, sometimes I don't. It brings up a lot of emotional pain for me, but it's also like I would still be in debt. I would have gone bust. It was too comfortable, Adam. You know, I worked for my dad. He didn't want to kick me out because I was his son, but he wanted to kick me out because he knew this wasn't what I wanted to do with my life. But he was my dad. The kindest thing he could have done was kick me out. Son, you got to stand up on your own. You're 26 and you're still in your nappy. Get the fuck out. That would have been the kindest thing he could have done, but my dad was never going to do that. But you know what happened on December the 15th, 2005, which is also his birthday, by the way, so right. That obviously makes it more emotional, is it was a great gift in many ways because, you know, if you look at my CV, Adam, I'm not bragging because obviously I've just told you all this.
Yep.
So you know it's not a brag, but I have one of the longest CVs of entrepreneurs in this country. Of what I've achieved. I mean, I even turned down things like Dragon's Den and Secret Millionaire. You know, I've got now 3 million followers on my media, which is big for a UK guy who's not an entertainer. But I feel so incomplete and only just starting and never satisfied. And I wouldn't even say, Adam, I'm particularly happy. I don't think my purpose is happiness. I think my purpose is to change the world and struggle to grow. So, I tell that story when I feel like it.
Well, I'm a great believer in serendipity, Rob. You and I haven't had the pleasure of meeting before this. So I start with that maybe open and easy question because I'm always intrigued as to where people go. For whatever reason you decided to go there, and I can tell you now that this episode is about to change direction slightly, and I want to have a very human conversation with you because whilst you have an incredible CV and I get to talk to amazing guests like you do, I'm very interested in the human being above the human doing. I want to ask you some questions because straight away this story has resonated with me because I know what it's like to be in a family where mental health is an issue, and I want to ask you this question. How did you deal with having mental health within the family unit as a younger man all those years ago? That's my first question.
Okay, so the honest answer is probably not very well.
Okay.
So I provide for my wife, my children, my mum, my dad, other people, not fully their entire needs, but a fair bit. I have a foundation that's, you know, given away probably in the 7 figures of money. I think we have about 130 staff in the office. I pay millions a year in taxes. So I think what I've convinced myself, Adam, is that I'm a good financial provider for a lot of people, and I'm proud of that. I really am.
Yeah.
And I did that for my family. I retired my mum and dad when they couldn't retire themselves. And even my mum, you know, it was obviously Mother's Day recently and sent a really nice message. And she said, look, you know, thanks for giving us the house and the car and everything else. And, you know, giving me the great job I've got because she works for me and she wouldn't have it to just receive. She has, you know, she's got value. But emotionally and in terms of presence of support, I was not very good at that. So my mum went through so much and I just continued to support financially, but actually emotionally and being there with a lot of time, I wasn't great. And I can't work out if I really regret that and hate that about myself, or if I actually did my job, which is to provide financially, because that's also very useful, because no one else did it. I fucking did it. And I did it quick. And I'm on the fence. I think if I'm honest, Adam, I ran away. No, I didn't leave Peterborough. I didn't leave my mum and dad, but emotionally ran away from having to face there and be there a lot when my dad was having his episodes and listen to my mum for hours on end when she was at breaking point. My sister did that a lot.
Right.
I wonder if maybe I didn't do that as much as I could. But then, you know, maybe I did my job. I don't know. I can't. It depends how I'm feeling. Today, I'm feeling very self-critical. And today, I'm feeling like I own everything. Whatever problems are happening in my life, I own them all. So today, I would say I was financially there, and I'm there for a lot of people. But emotion and time, I was scared and I ran away from it.
Why today, Rob?
Just because I'm owning everything in my life right now. Well, actually, no, that's not true. I'm owning all the problems and the difficulties and the challenges. I'm probably not owning enough all the successes and all the things I've achieved. So maybe the universe gives me these podcasts to reel off my CV to remind me. Actually, I've done a lot of great things.
You mentioned an emotion earlier on in this episode, and again, something that resonated, and I want to ask you a question. You talked about shame. How have you dealt with that emotion in your life? What's it doing or done for you in the work that you do? Because I'm trying to get to, and I'm hearing some of it. I know what you do, but why do you do what you do?
I think at times I probably run away from it, if I'm really honest with myself, because as I understand from the research that I've done, shame in men and women is different. And guilt in men and women is different. And I understand that, you know, to men, the two strongest negative emotions are shame and guilt. And, you know, we have a certain responsibility that's not better or worse, just different to women. And, you know, our suicide rates are much higher. And I think there's the pressure and the responsibility of what we've got to deliver. And so, you know, if I'm going to be nice to myself now and just switch it.
Yep.
You know, I've been a role model to millions of people, and I've helped tens of thousands of people become wealthy or on the way. Sold millions of books, had probably a billion listens and views of my content. And so I'm definitely changing the world when it comes to money. And the main driver of that is shame. The second driver of that is a vision, you know, a desire to be important and valuable and known and influential and respected and admired. But the driver behind it that forces me to do things is shame. And so at times I've run away from it, and it doesn't go away. It just keeps nudging you. And the longer you don't face it, the bigger your problems get. I would say, though,
yeah,
in the last 17 years, I've got pretty good at facing it. So basically, feel the shame, realize it's not really the situation, it's my childhood. Breathe in, face it, own it, do it.
So in some ways, Rob, we're getting a little bit of a peek behind the curtain here in relation to who is Rob Moore and what's actually part and parcel of the driving force for you. I want to ask you some questions in a moment in relation to your thoughts on leadership and money and entrepreneurs and some of the learning that you may have taken from what you do. But before we go there, I'm going to transition across. And I'm going to ask you, what's a moment that really mattered to you that was deeply positive Is there something that's a bit of a standout for you? A moment that really mattered that would make you very, very proud? What stands out for you?
Yeah, I remember when my wife was in the water bath, water birthing our daughter, my second child.
Yep.
And it's a bit visual, but when she was born, she popped out like a submarine and whizzed out into the water and they grabbed her and they pulled off all the, I don't know what it's called, the film that was on her, and she took her first breath, and then I immediately proposed to my wife. That's definitely a really memorable moment to me because two of the three most important women in my life were there. The other one is obviously my mum. And I'll treasure that moment forever. I think starting my company was a proud moment.
Yep.
I have 14 now. Breaking the world record for the longest public speech and giving all the profit, which was 125 grand immediately away to charity. That was a proud moment. Every time I launch a book, it's like, you know, having another child in a way, because it's a big thing to write a book.
It is. I've only done it once, Rob. I'm not sure I'd do it again.
Yeah, well, I will. I'm writing 5 at the moment and I've done 19. Definitely retiring my parents and being wealthy enough to be able to give back to them, and everything that they ever gave to me, they've had back. That's a really proud moment. So there's maybe 5 different ones.
Okay. Well, let me transition across, Rob, because you're quite adept at calling it out and telling it like it is, and certainly you're getting an interesting set of perspectives from quite an eclectic group of guests. This podcast is very much focused on leadership, and we said you did before we started, very much on the human-centered side of things. I think the landscape for leaders has changed dramatically. What are you seeing and hearing? What do you think is changing for people who are leading at the moment? Now, that could be leading small entrepreneurial businesses, medium-sized businesses, or some of the iconic monolithic businesses that we all know as household names. What do you think are some of the things that are really changing for leaders at the moment that they need to be mindful of?
I don't talk a lot on leadership, but actually I have a lot to say on it.
Well, you've got 14 companies, right? So you're certainly doing it.
Yeah. And I have a bit of a... you'll never hear me call myself a leader. And whenever someone in my organization calls me that, I sort of reject it a bit.
Why?
I don't know. I think it sounds self-congratulatory or hierarchical or dictatorial, which it isn't if you redefine leadership. So I think how leadership has changed is it's more important than ever to lead yourself first.
Agreed.
So, you know, if you think about when Henry Ford created the production line and they introduced coffee breaks to caffeinate drug you, basically, to do more work, you went in, you did your job, you do what you told, you came home. And, you know, the whole industrial revolution, that was that. Now, like, you have to lead yourself, i.e. you have to discipline yourself not to be on social media all day. You have to discipline yourself to stay with a company for more than 2 years because everyone seems to leave now. There's more opportunity than ever to start your own business. So are you going to lead yourself there? Work ethic in the UK has taken a nosedive since March 2020. So leading and managing people who maybe have a bit more entitlement. Everyone's got an opinion on everything, even though it's nothing to do with them anymore. Everyone has, because everyone's on social media. We're all so much more divided. Your son comes home and says, oh, at school today, Daddy, we've learned there are 60 genders.
Right.
I'm like, fuck me, the world's changed. You know, I used to come back and say, Dad, I learned, you know, Pythagoras. So the way that leadership has dramatically changed is leading yourself first, which I believe is managing your emotions. And most leadership I've ever heard or studied don't really talk about that. To lead yourself is to know yourself and be really self-aware of your flaws and failings and your skills, your strengths and weaknesses. Self-aware to know when you get triggered, is it the event or is it your trauma from 25 years ago? Are you bringing your trauma into every meeting and are you bringing your trauma into your management? And because now we are so much more triggered, Like, you know, I remember when I was 8 or 9 years old, there was nothing really new and nothing really old. And your day was the same. You got up, you had breakfast, you were going to be bored for the day if you were on school holidays. How could I entertain myself? I'll run in the cornfields at the back, I'll pick apples off the apple tree, I'll go and find my mates and play football. Now, there's a zillion bits of information thrown at us. We've got social media, ads everywhere, pitching, you know, trying to keep us on, giving us millions of dopamine hits, all this mindless entertainment, and getting triggered all the time, and everyone getting angry, and everyone ranting, and the extreme left, and the far right. Fuck. And so fundamentally, how can you get rid of all that noise and go, this is me, this is my strengths and weaknesses, this is my baggage and trauma, this is how I want to show up in the world, this is the kind of leader I want to be, this is my vision, and this is where I'm going, and this is how I'm going to be the best version of myself. That is a zillion times more challenged now. And that's where it starts. The next thing I would say is, for me, leadership is a measure of how many other people you nurture into a leadership position. You know, leadership isn't how many direct reports you have. It's not the seniority of your career. It's, do you nurture, develop, support and challenge people such that they step up to a leadership position themselves? You know, I don't know who's into football in here, but Jurgen Klopp, who is Liverpool's manager, he has got half of his squad injured right now. And he is getting out of them, like from these new academy players who are in their teams, who've never played, and then they're playing the biggest match of the season.
We saw it during the Carabao Cup, right?
Yeah, winning the cup, probably not with the best squad. You know, outplaying the best team in the world with half their injuries. And this guy is getting everyone else to step up. And there's no air of, oh, this guy's a leader or he's a dictator or he wants all the credit. There's none of that. And so that's the measure. The outcome measure of leadership is the quality of the people you impact. And so hierarchies and dictatorships, dead.
Listen,
in my opinion,
we're of a certain age. I'm older, by the way, Rob, but we're of a certain age where we remember the traditional environment of work, the hierarchies of organizations. But you're right. There's very much something about leading without authority. Anyone and everyone can be a leader. I made the mistake, Rob, of pumping into Google, what is leadership? And I got 1,950,000,000 answers, which is deeply unhelpful. But I had one guest who gave me a definition of leadership that resonated with me. I want to share it with you. He actually said to me, he says, leadership is your promise of a lived experience for those around you. And I really love that because it goes to the point that you've just made. It's not about title, rank, authority. It's about the lived experience that you create for the people around you. And you might actually be the most junior person. Any thoughts when I say that to you?
I'm just letting that percolate like my morning coffee.
Whilst you're letting that percolate, I'll tell you why I'm so passionate about this because, and I've shared this a lot with people, I got my first leadership role as a young lawyer and my mentor, who has now passed away, said something to me, Rob, that I never forgot. This is why I'm passionate about it. He said, congratulations. And he said, Adam, remember this, the children of the people that you lead will know your name. In what context? Well, that's up to you. And for me, it means that leadership is deeply, deeply personal.
Yeah. So the one final thing I probably have to say on this is respect.
Tell me more.
So over the last 45 years, which is how old I am, I have regularly convinced myself that I have handled a situation well because I avoided a conflict. And actually, virtually everyone that's met me likes me. Not all the fucking haters online. You know, there's billions of them. Well, no, there's not. But I want to be billions of them because that means I'm huge. But of anyone that's met me, most people like me. And I always used to think that was good. And what I've come to realize is being liked and being respected are different.
Okay.
And it's much easier to be liked because you can mold and adapt yourself to the person and they will like you. You can mirror the person and they will like you. You can avoid the conflict and they will like you. You can be like them and they will like you. But for someone to respect you, you have to piss them off and upset them at times. You have to call them out on their bullshit. You have to let them know your standards and that it's unacceptable to break those standards.
The non-negotiables.
And in time, they may like you, but in the moment, they may dislike you. And I think respect is much more important than being liked. Because it's easy to like and not easy to respect. And it's easy to get liked and it's not easy to get respected. And I think being respected is about having a clear set of standards that you hold people to. And you don't accept anything underneath those standards. And there are areas in my life as we speak where I either haven't had the standards or I've allowed the standards to be dropped in the, you know, I have shouldered the responsibility of millions of mistakes of my staff over the last 17 years. And I've always perceived that makes me a great leader. I don't shoot anyone down. I don't shame them. I don't blame them. I always own it. I look at a solution, not a problem. But actually, no. At times, Adam, I should have said to that person, I like you, and this isn't personal, but it is unacceptable what just happened there, and that cannot happen again. And if it does, then you'll be gone. And someone will never do that again. And you can say it with kindness, but be firm and mean it. And so I've shouldered too many fuck-ups because I've let people get away with them because I've navigated it in a mature and non-confrontational way. But inadvertently, the standards have been dropped. So now when I look at people who make recurring mistakes, instead of looking at them and going, yeah, they're not very good, I go, I haven't set the standard. Because here's the thing. You can't do this in the UK, Adam. But if every time a staff member of mine made a mistake, I decided to not pay them that month, they wouldn't make that mistake again. But unfortunately, in the UK, people can fuck up left, right, and center, and they still get paid. So I now see it as my job to be respected over being liked, which means I have to hold them to a standard. Now, in the long run, they will love me for that because their standards will improve thanks to the higher standard of themselves that I held them to. And that would be my final thing on this general discussion of leadership to add.
Well, this is about challenge, but challenging with care. And as one person outlined to me, if you challenge this much, just make sure you care this much. And if you challenge this much, just make sure you care this much. And in fact, by not having a critical or courageous conversation, what are the consequences? And you just outlined some of those. Listen, let me get you to reflect on something. In all the businesses that you've started and the entrepreneurial world that you operate in, and you're working with entrepreneurs all over the world, what would be some of the kind of best advice that's front of mind for you for entrepreneurs in a world, let's be honest, that's gone slightly bonkers? What really floats to the surface for you that really entrepreneurs should be mindful of?
Okay. Now, this depends what stage they're at,
okay,
Adam. You know, because in my book, Money Matrix, I talk about the four stages of building wealth. make it, manage it, multiply it, maintain it.
Okay.
They're the four stages. You can't maintain what you haven't got, but when you're a millionaire or a billionaire, you make money by moving it from place to place more so than you do earning it, or you make money more by paying less tax than you do earning more. So to answer this, what's the best advice? Depends on context. So I'll try and give you some answers context dependent. So if you are starting out or you're fairly new to the game of business and entrepreneurship, or you're going into, you're transitioning into something new, a great bit of advice would be to start now and get perfect later. So I wrote a book called Start Now, Get Perfect Later. Adam, there's not going to be someone watching or listening to this that can't relate to something that they really wanted to do in their life and they didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
They were scared it wasn't the right time. What if they failed? Yada, yada. We've all got that.
We've all been there.
But if you just, if you progressed imperfectly and you faced imperfection and failure and learned as you went, I mean, even today, I've had one piece of content that's had 200,000 views in 22 hours. I've had one piece of content that's had 5,000 views in 22 hours. Go figure. Both pieces of content were good. One wasn't necessarily better than the other. So I still have to fail every day at putting content out there. I have to fail every day, Adam. I don't mean to, but I have to. And if I'm not, I'm not doing enough. So anyone who's starting, imperfection, prolific over perfect, progress over perfection, it's probably the best advice you're going to get moving.
Yeah. And maybe it's easier to fail in the early stages when you have no almost product or service or customers.
It's way easier.
So again, what are your thoughts?
Or safer.
Well, of course. What do you think though when you start to become more established, where you're building a brand, you've got a reputation, you've got clients and customers, maybe you're having to work in somewhat of a regulated arena. I don't know. What are your thoughts in relation to being in that space?
So one of the things that's inadvertently developed in me, Adam, which I never thought would, because I'm actually quite bold and quite disruptive and quite courageous and quite mouthy and quite starting out, get perfect later-y, ready, fire,
the
aim.
Word, disruptors behind you, Rob.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, no, it's not ready, fire. Yeah, it's ready, fire, aim. So that being said, I've developed this callousness of safety through fear of losing what I've built.
Okay.
And that's not great for progress. So, you know, I've got a family who are used to a good life. I've got a reputation amongst millions of people. I would never want to go bust and prove all my haters right. You know, I've got a lot of material possessions. I've got 7 supercars. I've got a massive watch collection. I've got a load of property. And, you know, and I've got a lot of bank debt on the assets. So there's a real fear now of make one bad move, you could lose a lot of it. So if anyone's in the stage where they're doing quite well, you've probably got to unshackle that fear and go back to how you were when you started, more free, less serious, more fun, more agile. Like my biggest hate, well, no, look, I obviously don't like crime, but that aside, my biggest hate in business that doesn't break the law is slowness. I cannot stand bloated, slow indecisiveness. And the world's so full of it because everyone's scared and no one knows what to do. So I encourage speed and agility. And as you grow, any leader that's got, you know, more than 5 or 6 direct reports will know. And any leader that's in middle management will know. Oh, my God, I got to get this to the board, which is 3 levels above me. Or this has come from my manager. I've got to get this 3 levels below me. And I've got to get it signed off. And I've got to get a PO number. No. So anyone that can embrace speed, because money loves speed. Money hates friction. Money loves speed. Speed wins now. It really does. Like, Anyone getting into crypto right now, you fucking too slow. Sorry. Too slow. Should have done it in 2010. If you're not in AI now, you're too slow. So that is a thing for me where it's sort of unshackling friction and indecisiveness and embracing fun and energy and speed and dynamism. And you have to be bold to do that because sometimes you have to go, I sometimes make decisions without my business partner's consent.
Right.
Because I know it will slow it the fuck down. And in the end, I'm questionable to my board. Of course, I'm accountable, but I back myself. And at times I will go to him. So that's a big thing for me is speed and removing friction.
Well, they say, don't they? It's not the big that will eat the slow. It's the fast. Well, not the big that will eat the small. It's the fast that will eat the slow. Exactly to your point. Strangely, we've got someone coming in actually later on this week just to talk about simplicity, because as human beings, I think we are wired just to create complexity. Listen, you've only touched a little bit on money. I know you've written the new book, Money Matrix. I watched the promo video that you did, but we could talk about this for an entire episode. Perhaps we will do that at some point. But a question for you, if it's even a fair question, is what do you think is one of the biggest misconceptions at the moment in relation to money? I mean, we could reel off a whole host of cliches in relation to money, but anyone in business trying to generate money, what's the biggest misconception, Rob?
That's easy.
Go for it.
That's really easy.
Okay.
That it isn't one of the most important things in your whole fucking life. Like, people do not place a high enough importance on money. Oh, family. Oh, free time. Try raising a family when you're broke. Not as nice as raising a family when you've got financial resources. Mm-hmm. Travel. Try traveling when you're broke. Where are you going to stay? How are you going to get there? So no one wants to admit it except me and some Americans. Money is fucking important. And money should be one of the most important things in your life. Why? Not because of the judgment or the morality, but because it's a tool that society have universally agreed replaced barter to exchange value. Without money, you cannot eat unless we go back to barbaric or barter times. Without money, you can't do anything unless we go back to trade. So the biggest misconception of money is that it's not one of the most important things in your life. And the reality is this. Take any situation. I challenge everyone now listening and watching to think of any situation. Family, love, business, holiday. Take any situation and think of it now. Is it better or worse with more money? I do not think anyone can say anything is better with less or no money. Everything is better with more money. Now, money might not make you happy, but it makes everything happier. So if you want to travel from A to B, is it easier with money? I have a driver, which makes travel really easy. One, I don't get the stress of the travel. Two, he plans the route, not me. Three, I can do all my work in the back of the car and I can make 25 grand in a journey and I've only paid 300 quid for my driver that day. So what a gift it is to have a driver. And it's not about, oh, look at Rob Moore, he's got a driver. It's like, look at Rob Moore being able to make money in dead time. So money isn't everything, but everything is better with money.
Rob, let me ask you this question. We'll let you just go in with the flow here. There's certainly a move, isn't there? More than just a conversation around money becoming more and more digitized. Any thoughts in relation to that?
Yeah. Money will naturally become more digitized because money loves speed and money hates friction.
Right.
And money will evolve in its form to the highest speed and lowest friction form. Just like information as well.
Yep.
A few hundred years ago, information flew at the speed of a bird when we would write a note and put it on a homing pigeon or a, you know, you see in the old films, don't you?
Thankfully, that even predated me.
Yeah, just about. And now information flows at the speed of light. Well, actually, with quantum entanglement, now it looks like information can simultaneously exchange, i.e. there is a faster speed than the speed of light. Money's the same. You know, money used to be in stones. Money's evolved in form over time, and it makes sense for money to travel at the speed of light because it can manifest itself, it can become itself. However, I think it is heinously dangerous for us to all roll over like an upturned turtle and accept a central bank digital currency, because money is actually freedom. Because when you have money, you can say no. You are not free if you can't say no. If someone says you've got to do this and you've got to do that and this is when you've got to do it, and you don't like it, but you've got to do it, you don't have freedom. And if you are not rich, you have to do what other people tell you, because you're not rich enough to say no. I'm rich enough to say no. Don't want to do this. Not doing it. And that is what freedom is. Freedom is the ability to say no because you can afford to. Most people can't get up and say, no, I'm not going to work today, to their boss. I can. So the opposite of, this is why I wrote the Money Mate, my book, Money Matrix. Because if money is freedom for you, if you've got it, it's control for whoever makes it. So if I print money and make money and tax you and lend to you at a high rate of interest, and I get a mortgage on you for 25 years, and I don't educate you about money, and I convince you that what you're doing is the best for your future, and you're bound to me for the rest of your life, Adam, then I control you because you need me. This is exactly what the banks and the governments do to us. And I'm teaching people to liberate themselves from this.
I think you say, don't you? Actually, we are the product, if that is the way that we work.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell us what you mean by that we are the product, yeah. Or people are the product.
When I say you are the product, unless you're borrowing money from the banks and getting passive income from the assets leveraging the bank's money, they're doing it to you.
Right.
You know, if you've got money in savings, savings. Your savings account is not savings, because inflation is higher than interest. So do you know what savings should be called? Degradings. Right. Would you put your money in a degradings account? No, you fucking wouldn't. So they call it savings, but it's not, because your money is going down. Oh, and then they own it. So would you put your money into your disown account? I.e. you don't own your money anymore as soon as you put it in. No, you wouldn't put your money in a disown account. But when you give the money to the banks, it's theirs. It's not yours. And no one knows this shit. Well, a few of us do. And that's why I'm teaching it. So do not roll over for a central bank digital currency. Because as soon as it's a central bank digital currency and there's no cash and they control the currency, they have a maximum control. Oh, Adam, we don't want you to leave the country for the next 12 months. We're going to investigate you for something you posted on Facebook 22 years ago. Then they can just control you, because they can say, no, passport stopped, bank account stopped. If you go beyond the border, you got no money. Let's say they want to go, oh, lockdown 2030, Adam. We don't want you to leave the house. They'll just shut your bank account. If you leave the house, they'll just shut your bank account. And this is what this is the power that they will have as a central digital currency. So we must fight this.
Now, I've seen Jordan Peterson. I think he appeared in front of the Senate, I think, and actually made an impassioned plea in relation to some of the dangers that you're talking about here. What would be maybe the best piece of advice that you'd give? I've got a couple of teenagers, and you know, a lot of the young adults now coming through business who are bright as buttons, full of talent. They're the future of many businesses. What might be the best piece of advice you'd give them in relation to managing their money, or just becoming more aware of making the money work for them, not the other way around?
Sure. So on my membership portal,
yep,
my digital financial freedom portal, which is called rob.team, I'm actually launching a new homeschooling section where I'm going to be regularly creating content for kids,
yep,
if they choose they want to homeschool or part homeschool. And on rob.team, if any parent joins and gets their membership, their kids always have free membership. So I'm giving all kids free membership right. to rob.team. We'll signed up through their parent.
All right. We'll put these links, by the way, in the show notes, Rob.
Sure. So the fundamentals of money, I would start to teach them. So the first thing is pay yourself first.
Yep.
It's a fundamental rule of money. The next one is never spend more than you earn. Now, a lot of people think paying yourself first means buying shit for yourself. No, it doesn't. Paying yourself first means save first, invest second, spend last. So when you're an adult, if I said to every adult listening now, Adam, save a third, invest a third, spend a third, they'll be like, well, I can't do that. I don't earn enough money. You know, I can't save anything. I mean, so when you're already stuck in the system, you can't even save 5%, invest 5%, spend 90%.
Mm.
But when you're a kid, you can. So I teach my kids all the time. If they get any money, birthday, Christmas, anniversary, they earn it, they work for it, because I get my kids to come and work for me in the office sometimes. My daughter, who's 9,
right.
has a bracelet-making business. It's always save a third, invest a third, and then you can spend the rest, which is a third.
Okay.
Now, saving doesn't make you rich. Investing does. So saving is so you can invest in the future. It's the journey from spending to investing. Saving is in the middle. Pay yourself first, save a third, invest a third, spend a third. And then I would say, know that money flows to people who are valuable.
Now tell me what
so
you mean by valuable.
So figure out how to become valuable.
Okay.
Now, kids could sell ice cream at school or they could do their homework for the other kids, or they could figure out what the teachers aren't good at and do it for them. But essentially, being valuable is working out what's needed and doing or creating it. So they're probably the three tips.
Okay. Top tips. I know that the focus on money has been a passion for you and the work that you do, and we'll put in all the links there in relation to how you're helping people and how people can get involved and learn more. Obviously, as another podcast host, I'm intrigued by just the sheer amount of guests that you've spoken to, some pretty high-profile names as well. What's that all about? So tell me what's behind the Disruptors and the podcast channel and talking to all of these people, and it's quite an eclectic mix of people. I'll come on to some specifics in a minute. But are you searching for something or are you investigating something? What's going on?
Oh, I'm always searching for something, Adam, and sometimes I know what I'm looking for and sometimes I'm confused.
I mean, you've done hundreds and hundreds of episodes. So what are you searching for still?
Global impact, I would say, if I had to summarize it in two words. I will not stop. I will not rest. I will not sleep. And I will not give up until I'm 110 years old and I've impacted 1 billion people's lives. I just know this for a fact. It's just, I don't ever doubt it. When I'm having the worst day, when there's all sorts of shit going on, when everyone wants to take me down, when I'm feeling most shameful and vulnerable and lonely and childlike, it's still there. It will never go away. And I've evolved my vision. Now, my personal vision is to help as many people on this planet get better financial education. And 7 billion people need that. So I've got some work to do. So global impact is the reason I do everything I do. It's the reason I'm on this show. It's the reason I haven't charged you my otherwise hefty speaking fee, Adam.
I'm grateful to you.
So that is the reason. I mean, there are other reasons. But, you know, why do I want to hack virality? Why do I want to get billions of views? Global impact. Why do I want to make a load of money? Yeah, you know, I want nice things, Adam. I want... I love nice cars and nice watches and nice houses. I've got a lot of them, but I don't need any more. I probably only really use 3 of my houses, 3 of my watches and 2 of my cars. So I could probably sell 400 of them. But what burns in me, like that flue in the boiler that never goes out, it never goes. Like what's his name? Robert Downey Jr. What's his character?
Oh, Iron Man.
Iron Man. You know Iron Man, like that thing yeah. in his heart. For me, that...
You're not about to reveal one, are you?
No. It's a hunger and a yearning to have a global impact, to help the world be better with money.
You've spoken to many, many guests, and some of those guests may be classified or categorized as people who have had global impact. Robert Kiyosaki, Stephen Bartlett, Grant Cardone, Will.i.am, and there's many of them. Is there an episode that stands out for you that was memorable for some reason? Is there one that just really stands out? It had an impact on you, or something happened in it where you, I don't know, it was just, it's really front of mind always.
I mean, all the Tate ones I've done, Andrew Tate, 3 interviews, Tristan Tate once. They're the most polarizing. They're always fascinating.
Well, you just came back from Romania, didn't you, for the Tate brothers?
Yeah.
Well, how did that come about?
Yeah, I did 7 hours of content with Andrew and Tristan. Yeah, I did. And of course, that just saying that upsets a lot of people, and just saying that inspires a lot of people. So, you know, they're really fascinating guys. Chris Eubanks, so he's an ex-world champion boxer. And
grown up watching
so
Chris Eubanks.
Abrasive and rude and challenging and stubborn and weird. And it was my biggest test as an influencer, but I felt like I grew. Sorry, my biggest test as an interviewer. And I felt like I really grew. So, you know, one of my big fears in doing interviews for many years was potentially pissing off or upsetting the guest. I don't really have that fear anymore. I mean, I want to build a good relationship. I want to stay in touch with them after. You know, I'm not in for collecting enemies. I'm in for collecting friends and collaborators and partners. However, I think it was 50 Cent. I love this. He said, "If you can't be my friend, please be my enemy." And so now I bring a bit more heat and challenge, and I ask harder questions, and I'm more direct and more abrupt and more blunt and more challenging. Not in the Piers Morgan sense, which I think is just a great big ego show. And so going through a hard, obnoxious, rude, quite frankly, weird, challenging interview like that. I mean, you have to watch it, because honestly, it's the most awkward thing you'll ever watch in your life.
Okay.
And, you know, it's had hundreds of thousands, not millions of views, but it is my cult episode that everyone comes back to. My 3 cult episodes are, I interviewed Pablo Escobar's son, and then he turned out to be a fake and a fraud, and then I interviewed his real son.
The first one
and
was
then Chris Eubank. They're my 3 cult, you know, they're not the most famous, but they're my 3 cult ones. And anything that makes me grow, I look back and go, yeah, that was great.
Rob, I want to come back to the Tate brothers, because they are forever in the news. The world is incredibly polarized. And as you're right, people will have a view, either or, in relation to the Tate brothers. They're not going to be sit on the fence. They're going to like or they're not going to like. What's the biggest takeaway from you from having a conversation with the Tate brothers in the current climate? And obviously we've seen the news this week as well. What is really the biggest takeaway for you?
The biggest takeaway is full ownership. Andrew Tate admitted that he got himself in prison. And yeah, he's fighting as best as he can, and he's creating a rallying cry, and he's whooped up millions of people in support of him and his mission. But he admitted to me, to my face, when I challenged him, because I basically said this.
Yeah.
Him going to prison was his fault.
In what way?
And you know, he and his brother have this message of full ownership where everything is your fault. I mean, if you only learn that, then that is an amazing lesson. I mean, I think, I don't know if you saw, but recently the Napoleon documentary came out. I don't know when Napoleon was in prominence and when he was alive. Hundreds of years ago, I think. And only now have Netflix done a documentary on him. Andrew Tate and Tristan Tate and their life is a huge Netflix autobiographical documentary in the making, but we're all getting to see it live.
Right.
I don't think people realize how fucking lucky we are. We all the series we watch on Netflix of all these amazing, inspiring people, or these divisive, polarizing ones, or these evil ones, but the life stories that we actually want to watch, that are full of everything, that are compelling viewing to us on Netflix, is happening right now, live. And we've got a front seat with Andrew and Tristan Tate. What a great gift, regardless of what you believe. Here's another lesson. And most people don't have the self-awareness or the wisdom to get this lesson. And that is, a great test of your wisdom is if you can learn from someone like Tristan Tate or Andrew Tate. An even better test of your wisdom is if you can learn something from them and dislike them at the same time.
No, I appreciate that, Rob. And there's a whole cadre, isn't there, of people that you've spoken to, whether it's David Icke or Nigel Farage or Katie Hopkins. What are they doing for the world then? As you say, they're very polarizing for people. But what do you think they're doing? Are they offering a degree of challenge where people have got to work out what is the lesson in this, or where do I stand in the debate that might be going on?
Yeah. So if you believe that someone isn't doing anything valuable for the world,
yeah,
you're either judging them based on what you perceive as value, or you are too blind to see their value. So here's something that I don't get enough credit for. So I'm just going to say it.
Put it out there.
I interview very controversial people in a very useful way, and I draw out of them stuff that no one else draws out of them. Number one, I draw out lessons about business and entrepreneurship that no one else gets out of Katie Hopkins or Nigel Farage or David Icke. They just go to all those controversial places. I draw out lessons that people can use in their life to be more successful and make money. So no one's really going, hey, you know what Rob does? He goes to all these controversial people and he actually gets the best value out of them. But that's what I fucking do. And I'll continue to do that. So what value are these people bringing to the world? They're forcing us to think. They're challenging the status quo. They're being bold and courageous. They're like taking bullets for us. Because whether you agree with Nigel Farage, he shouldn't have been debanked. Whether you agree with Katie Hopkins, she shouldn't have been cancelled, you know, like she was. Whether you agree with David Icke, he shouldn't be banned from every European country. So they're taking bullets for us.
Why do you think there is a huge amount of people who look at those kinds of characters and fear them?
Well, I don't think a lot of people will admit that they fear those characters. I think people would say they dislike them. I think people would judge them. It takes a bit of self-awareness to go, I fear that person. And most people, I don't think, are that self-aware.
Or do they fear the influence that they carry?
Maybe. I think it's more judgment.
Tell me what you mean.
Here's something
judgment.
I know, Adam, about myself.
Go on.
I am imperfect. I've never murdered anyone. I've never committed a serious crime. I have pinched some money out of my mum's purse when I was about 10, which I'm deeply shameful of, but probably not going to get put to prison. I have told some lies. Who hasn't? My point here is I've not done any major crime, but other than that, I'm a flawed human and I've made mistakes. And you know the people who I know make a lot of mistakes are the ones that get on their high fucking horse and judge everyone else. So before you're going to go judging everyone else, have a look in the mirror. I wonder what you could do better before you go and get on your moral high ground about Nigel Farage or Katie Hopkins or David Icke or whatever. You know, if nothing else but David Icke gets you to question the truth and the reality of everything, surely that's wisdom. Don't just believe it, question it. All right, you might not think we're run by lizards, but, you know, question if the banks are actually serving us, question if the pharmaceutical companies are actually serving us, question if sugar is a poison or not. These things are good to question. So we judge people on our own standards. And when we judge people on our own standards, we moral high ground ourselves that our standards are right and other people's standards are wrong. That's not the case. We're all just different. And so don't rob yourself of the valuable lesson that could improve your life while you're on your high horse morally judging other people trying to live their best life.
What's the legacy that you want to leave in people's minds in relation to what you've done and how you've done it?
Okay, so the legacy I want to leave is that people had a better relationship with money thanks to what I did. The way I want to achieve it is something along the lines of what a lot of people say about me, which was, I wasn't sure at first, Rob. You know, you pissed me off, you challenged me, I wasn't sure about your style, you're a bit ranty. You know, initially they have a bit of a trigger, but then they get over that trigger and then they actually go all in. Because my show is called Disruptive. One of my brand values is disruptive. And to get people to change, you have to trigger them. Otherwise, they're not going to change. So that would be my legacy.
Okay. And indeed, most large organizations want to be the disruptors and not the disrupted, because that certainly puts a lot of big brands out of business, as you and I have seen over time. Listen, best way for people to get in touch with you, learn more, get you involved in their conversation, Rob?
I'd probably say rob.team.
Okay.
So rob.team is my digital financial freedom platform. It kind of takes what I share in my new book, Money Matrix, but it's ongoing with community, with support, with regular masterclasses each week. We've got almost 10,000 members since we started. And it's a central hub of everything because I've done thousands of pieces of content. And the central hub of everything is rob.team. You just can literally type in rob.team.
Gotcha. And the Disruptors podcast, they can access that through the normal platforms, YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah, Disruptors on all channels. We've got a Disruptors channel on TikTok, on YouTube, on audio. If you search my name into Amazon, you'll see all the books I've written. Money Matrix is the latest one.
That's available now.
Yep.
Gotcha. All right, we'll put all those in the show notes. Listen, Rob, thanks for taking the time to chat. I hope you've enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you very much.
All right.
It's been a pleasure.
Hey, take it easy.
Join us again next week for more curiosity and insight with the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with me on LinkedIn or visit us at www.leadersenigma.com. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe on all your major podcast platforms and on our dedicated YouTube channel. Thanks again for joining the community.